Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Yes, it's the mouse, after which would probably come the pie in the face. You know, the pie in the face is back this year in New York. If you're a baseball fan, you know that. Soupy sales if you don't know the mouse. It's just silly. It's the mouse. He would put his thumbs in his ears and wave his fingers out like mouse ears. But that's the least of what Soupy Sales was about. Oh, the pie in the face, right. It's most associated with walk-off wins by the Yankees. Right? If they win in the bottom of the ninth or later, somebody from the team comes and whacks whoever got the game-winning hit in the face with a pie. So that's become a Yankee thing this year as they head to the World Series. But it was once the domain in New York of Soupy Sales, the quirky, funny man who died on Thursday at the age of 83. We didn't get to mention this on Friday. And over the weekend, there was so much internet traffic about Soupy Sales, who you might have thought was a minor figure, and yet who, generated this certain passion among his fans. He was really kind of a cult figure, especially here in New York, among baby boomers who saw his Channel 5 weekday afternoon show as kids. So I thought we would open up the phones for a few minutes and play a few clips of Soupy Sales to begin this hour. Your memories of Soupy Sales at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Anyone who knew him is very welcome to call, but mostly anyone who watched him, 212-433-9692. And part of Soupy Sales' appeal is that he was not just a regular stand-up comedian. He wasn't just funny. He was very different. For one thing, he was a jazz fan who brought Charlie Parker onto his show and others onto straight TV, you know, when they weren't being invited elsewhere on the tube. He was quirky in that way, and I guess he could get away with that in those days. He had these fictional sidekicks like White Fang and what was the other one? Black something. But White Fang was just this arm of a big bear or something that would come on and talk to him. And I think of Soupy Sales in a category with Rocky and Bullwinkle and Mad Magazine and Gene Shepard and things like that from the 1960s era that were mainstream but a little bit subversive. Mainstream but a little bit subversive. And, of course, the most infamous Sales moment. And let's cue up this Soupy Sales on the media clip. That's A3 over there. Soupy Sales once told the kids to go to their parents' wallets and mail to him the little pieces of green paper that they would find there. And a few years ago, he talked about that green paper incident to Brooke Gladstone of NPR's On the Media.
Oh, that was me. Something, a green piece of paper. It was one of those things that was for the moment. I could do what I wanted to do, and I did it. It was a wild show. Highly unpredictable. They tried censorship a few times, but it was never very effective because there was never any problem with what I was doing. Nothing really they could nail me on.
So I see that Bernie in Flushing is calling in, who says he was Soupy Sales' press agent for 10 years. Bernie, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Tell me more. What did you do with Soupy Sales and when?
I was Soupy Sales' press agent from 1963 for about 10 years at the prime of his career. And I was also Ed Sullivan's press agent. In fact, I just wrote a book about Ed Sullivan called Sundays with Sullivan and talked about it on London.
Oh, yeah, that's you? Uh-huh, that's great. So let's see, did that include the green paper incident years? Were you around for that?
Yes, yes. And the thing with Soupy that people didn't understand was that he was just not a comedian. He wrote his show. He directed his show. He used to get in at 5 o'clock in the morning some days to put that show together. It was a daily show, five times a week, half hour, and he created all those great characters like White Fang and Philo Kvetch and so on. He was a really, I call him the Ernie Kovacs of the kid TV series because he was just a very creative guy.
He said in that clip with Brooke Gladstone that he had to battle censorship from time to time. Did you experience any of that?
He ran into a problem. He was on the Dumont Television Network, and he ran into a problem when he said to the kids in the audience, if your father has sort of a wallet and he has some green pieces of paper in that with president's picture on it, put it in an envelope and send it to me. And it was a joke, but he did get about $7 or $8. And there was
a person.
Yeah, and that's all he got. But it caused such a commotion because there were several people that called the station and complained about it. And so the station suspended him for a week.
Did you see him? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Did I see him?
No. Did you see him as subversive in any way?
No. That, everything was a joke with him. He was subversive in no way at all. He was a comedian. And the thing with Soupy, which was interesting, was he was always on. You know, some people have a different personality off and on. He was never different. Always up, up, up.
That's why he was able to go on and be a talk show host after he got on television, because he was always on. I remember the days, I guess it was the 1980s, the lineup on 66, which was then WNBC AM, is now The Fan, was Don Imus in the morning, then Soupy Sales in middays, and then Howard Stern in the afternoon. Could you imagine that radio station? But Soupy Sales came on in the middle of between Don Imus and Howard Stern.
Right. He got along well with Imus, but he never got along with Howard Stern.
Why not?
They had a constant feud going.
Why? Over what?
But it made for good radio. You know, Soupy was really a straight-laced guy. He would never talk the way Howard did, and he would call Howard on it. But Soupy was a great guy. In fact, we for many years, right up to the time he passed away last year, would have lunch at the Friars Club. That was sort of his home, you know, like many comedians. And he was always a really generous, nice person. Unfortunately, about 10 years ago, he had a terrible fall while he was doing an act in a nightclub. He tripped, and he hurt himself seriously, and that's why he wasn't seen in the last 10 years
much. Uh-huh. Bernie, thanks for calling in. This has been great. What's your book again?
Bernie Ilson, ILSON. The book is Sundays with Sullivan. And there's a couple of stories about Soupy in it, too.
That's great. Thanks a lot for calling in. We really appreciate it. One of the things with Soupy Sales was a recurring segment called Words of Wisdom, which was usually the opportunity for really bad puns. For example, this about chicken cacciatore.
They're very important today, right?
Right. Yeah!
Show me a giant rooster chasing a member of parliament, and I'll show you a chicken cacciatore. He's out there watching the show. Anyway, now, just what do we mean by that?
Yeah, what do we mean by that?
I will tell you, Gwen.
And I wonder how many 10-year-olds in Queens actually got that joke. Robin Butler, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rob.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You have a memory of watching Soupy Sales?
Yeah, at the time, actually, I was working at United Airlines and was flying from L.A. to New York City, and as a standby, got on first class thinking I was the last person. When I did get on first class, however, I knew that the seat next to me was was empty, and as we were just about to close the door, this great cacophony of noise and stumbling and carrying on came from the back of the cabin, and it was Soupy Sales dropping his bag and spilling a drink, and he wound up sitting next to me, and for the entire flight, 5 hours, I couldn't eat, I couldn't drink. The man told nonstop jokes.
Wow.
The two folks in front of us were on their knees facing us. The two guys behind us were on the back of our seat, and it was just the most hysterical time of my life.
And
the
you were just strangers, right? So he really was always on.
Total strangers. I remember him from his show on Channel 5 for sure, growing up in New Jersey. But what a terrific guy. He was so sweet. But he just, I mean, my sides, I felt like I had done 12 rounds with Ali.
Do you remember any of the jokes?
There were very few that I could repeat on the radio, Brian.
Really? Okay.
He was so generous, like the gentleman before me said. Just a terrific guy, and he was always on. Always on.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for your call. Now, here's a great comment that came into our Facebook page. I think our website is down, but you can write your Soupy Sales stories into our Facebook group, the Brian Lehrer group at Facebook. And Leon Winter, who writes about the melding of white culture and black culture in America, Leon Winter, formerly from the Wall Street Journal, wrote us a comment on the webpage a little while ago that said, "I've often said that I was a Jewish New Yorker before I was black. Now that I think about it, a big part of my pre-black sensibility came from the subversive, quasi-Borscht Belt anarchy of the Soupy Sales show. What I remember most fondly, actually, was not the show as much as the credit music. I would stay riveted through every last measure of that crazy stride piano solo. It sounded like the soundtrack of an insane clown show, and every time you thought it was done, they raised the key a half step and did it again. It was like climbing a musical staircase to madcap heaven. God bless you, Soupy," writes Leon Winter. Says Soupy Sales was one of the ways he was Jewish before he was black, Leon. And maybe, you know, for all the jazz that he brought onto his TV show, he made a little bit of America black before so many people became black when other forms became so popular. Suzanne in Montlake, is that where you are?
That's right.
Hi, yes. Suzanne.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I grew up in Detroit in the 50s, and so Lunch with Soupy was something that everybody did.
Right, before he came to New York and did that Channel 5 show for kids, he had a local Detroit show, didn't he?
That's right, and he used to post what he was going to have for lunch the next day, and thinking about it, there was probably a lot of Jell-O in the mix there.
Go ahead.
What I called about was when I was in grammar school, they had a mother-daughter's deal at our grammar school, and I convinced my mom to go. And Soupy was there, and we came home knowing how to do the Soupy Shuffle. And I had three brothers who were extremely jealous.
Was that an adult show in Detroit, show for adults?
Oh no. The thing, it was noontime. It was for kids.
It was for kids.
Yeah.
So it was for little kids, preschool kids?
Because what
kid is watching?
We were all in grammar school watching it. Yeah.
Do you remember seeing any jazz? Because as I was looking on YouTube over the weekend, there are some great clips. The WKCR DJ, Sid Gribbett, sent me a clip of Clifford Brown on Soupy Sales on the Detroit show in 1955-56. And, you know, that was one of the things. He would bring on these guys, Clifford Brown, Charlie Parker, these legendary jazz people who were not getting on to other mainstream TV. Do you recall that at all as being even a peripheral part of it?
I was pretty young then. I remember, you know, White Fang and Black TV more than that from
right.
that period.
And it goes right with that wacky stride piano closing that Leon was writing about. Suzanne, thank you. Ron in Bound Brook. You're on WNYC. Hi, Ron.
How do you do?
Good.
I got to tell you, I have two things to say about Soupy Sales. We used to have a Soupy Sales day in high school, and everybody would dress up with the tie and the hat and everything, just like he would. The teachers, too. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, okay. And you know, these cell phones, you never know if they drop on you. And the other thing is, because of him doing jazz on TV, I'm a jazz player myself. I'm a professional trumpet player in New York. I play for the Front Page Big Band, Jerry Drake's Front Page Big Band. And
so, Ron, I think I think you may drop out before your cell phone. So let's give somebody else the last word. Let's see who's good up here. Pakula in Soho, you're going to get the last word. We got 30 seconds for you to give us your soupy memory.
Hi. It's me. It's tequila. Anyway, I'm also from Detroit. I also learned to do the soupy shuffle, and he came to our synagogue for Purim, and I got to do the soupy shuffle with Soupy at our synagogue for Purim. He lived around the corner in northwest Detroit.
Okay, and since he was obviously ecumenical, we're going to throw in Nora in Glen Rock, too. Nora, real quick.
Hey, I was in Catholic school in the early 60s, and I used to race home from school to catch his show because it was such a relief from dealing with the nuns all day and a huge classroom full of kids. He was just so much fun, and it was great to see all the silliness, and I love the characters. And my mother couldn't get the show. She didn't understand what it was, what was so interesting about it. But my brothers and I sure did get it. So we love the show, and I really miss the man.
And what was it for you? Was it just his kind of warm silliness?
It was just silly. I mean, you know, you could just go and just get silly, you know, after a day in school. And it was just so much fun. And you know, it's a shame. I don't know if his tapes are around or if there's anything on YouTube. I haven't checked that yet, but...
Yeah, lots of stuff.
Yeah, you know, because I would love my kids to see it. It's just so funny.
Nora, thank you very much. Soupy Sales, dead at 83.
It sounds so romantic and perky. Oh, I know that phrase will make me thrill always, for it reminds me of you, my sweet. Just the mention of that tender word of love gives my heart a jerkish, turkish beat.